A city is stronger together. So let's hear some of the best conversations from Milwaukee and Wisconsin's business and community leaders on the Best of the Upswing. Presented by Horicon Bank, the natural choice for all your banking needs. Now here's the host that's always on the upswing, WTMJ's Jeff Sherman.
Now, to business, gentlemen.
Welcome to the Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman, proudly, as always, presented by the community-minded team at Horicon Bank. Thanksgiving weekend always brings out the very best in our neighborhoods, doesn't it? It's a time for gathering and gratitude and all the traditions that make our communities feel like home. And today, Saturday, it's not just any other day. It is Small Business Saturday. So before we dive into some best of Upswing interviews for the season, we're going to take a moment just to recognize what this day really means and stands for. Small Business Saturday, obviously a reminder of how supporting local shops and boutiques and restaurants really helps build strong communities. Local businesses, they're the heartbeat of our main streets, and they're often started by entrepreneurs with a dream, right? But that dream has to be backed by somebody. Local banks, local investors, local teams who all roll up their sleeves. They take the risks. They create the jobs. They find the leases. They rent local spaces. And they do it all for their friends and their family and neighbors. But I want to dig into the data just a little bit. The data shows, and this is what's really, truly important about this day, 48% of each purchase at a local independent business is recirculated locally. You say, well, why is that important? Well, you compare it to the national stores. That's 14% at chain stores. So this means that shopping small, shopping local, greatly benefits local economies. So this gap between that 14 and 48%, it's driven by three factors. Let me just break this down a little bit. The profits, when you look at a local independent business, the profits usually go back locally and they stay in the community. Why? Because the labor, right? The labor, the team that works at the local boutique, they tend to live local. It's all local staff, it's local management, it's local marketing, it's local HR. And the procurement, local businesses often hire local accountants, printers, banks, and service providers. As compared, the flip side, the national chain stores, they're usually mandated to use national contracts for banking, supplies, and services. So that accounts for that difference. You look at labor. Same thing on the chain side. And I got nothing against it. You know, go buy your stuff at Costco and Walmart. Save some money for sure. But know that some of that management and the HR and the marketing, it's often centralized at corporate headquarters. And same with the profits on the national chain side. The profits are siphoned off to corporate headquarters that are often out of state. So today especially, take time out of your day to shop small, because it's not just about picking that unique gift or that favorite treat. It's about investing in the fabric of our hometowns. Another stat to keep in mind, this weekend often accounts for nearly 20% of sales for the entire year for small businesses. And since Small Business Saturday started, over $200 billion has been spent nationwide on this day alone. So it's truly important to embrace small, to embrace the holiday. Consider your local neighborhood and community. Celebrate the spirit of local entrepreneurship and keep our communities thriving. Coming up next from October, Flori Jerez Villaseñor, a Milwaukee-based financial advisor and field director with Northwestern Mutual, join the show. She talks about her path to Northwestern Mutual and how we can all better budget for the holiday season. Welcome back to the Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Northwestern Mutual advisor Flori Jerez Villaseñor joins us. Flori, thanks for taking time out of your day to be with us. I want to just kind of first get your background and kind of what made you kind of choose the career path of financial planner.
Yeah, so my pathway is a little different than most. Okay. Most times, a lot of the advisors that come through our system are, you know, in school for this type of thing, finance, some things related to that. I actually am a career changer, so okay. I was in a different career prior to this, and I actually spent some time in corporate Northwestern Mutual before making the jump into the financial advisor space, and a lot of times people don't even know the difference. I'll get into that a little bit, but just backwards reverse, I was actually at a bank. Okay. I was working at a bank as a manager there. And once I graduated with my degree, I just really was encouraged to put it out, you know, on the social media, you know, the LinkedIns, the Indeed, Monster, all that stuff back then. And really, I was reached out to by a recruiter.
Okay.
And it was a real gamble because the recruiter who was reaching out to me was actually offering a contract position through the corporate space. And that comes with a lot of risk, right? There's nothing
risk
guaranteed.
Risk return, though. That's what financial planning is often about, right?
Exactly. You got to take the right risks.
Yeah.
So really just took a lot of time to, you know, weigh the pros and cons and decided, you know what, let's take that jump. Went into the contract role and then ended up getting hired in shortly after. I probably spent 2-3 months as a contractor. Uh-huh. And at that time, Northwestern Mutual was actually rolling out their very first bilingual line. Mm. So a line that's going to offer our clients Spanish services. And that was one of my skill sets. Uh-huh. So that's how I actually got into the company Northwestern Mutual.
And you were born in Guatemala?
I was, yes. Yeah, okay. So I was born
in
Guatemala.
When did you come to the United States?
Huh? Very young. I was 3 years old.
All right.
So I pretty much, this is all I know, right?
Yeah.
Here, being here in the United States. We, you know, we visit Guatemala every here and there, but this is my home. I was raised here, but I was also raised with the roots of my culture. So speaking Spanish in the home, you know, cooking our Hispanic plates, all of that wonderful stuff. So the best parts I kept.
Is there then kind of a natural passion lane there for you in terms of clientele you want to serve and how you want to help give back?
That's a great question. Absolutely. I think what I've seen, especially coming from my background and experiencing what my parents experienced, really helps form like a bridge to reaching people like my parents to build wealth and to reach generations outside of just, I think with a lot of different families, the thought process is now, right? What can we do now? What can we buy now? I want to give my kids everything now. So really it's just helping them see the vision of the future and the generations to come. Yeah. And that's kind of been really powerful in my life and in my story. And I feel like a lot of times people want to see themselves in the people who help them, right?
Yeah.
So that is the biggest trust factor when I'm speaking with people in that community.
Yeah, being able to see the future through eyes that are similar to your own are very important, whether it's you know, someone in your community or a mother or father. It's interesting. Our son just turned 18, so I had an Acorns account that we've been saving up for him that I kind of handed over to him. And so all the tools there are able to forecast, you know, if you save until you're 60 or 75, like he saw the dollars go up. And just, you know, having those tools at disposal from someone that you trust is really, really important. Let's talk a little bit about holiday spending, if you will. And I'm guessing, you know, some of your answers may be somewhat similar, but it's a different festive time of the year. And you're looking at a lot of the forecasts already for the upcoming season. It looks like spending may be down a little bit. Budgets might be a little tighter. Prices are a little higher. But what's that perfect kind of, hey, how do I best plan for a season that I want to be super festive about, but I don't want to turn around in January and be like, oh my gosh, I overspent.
So yeah, I think you hit it on the head where some answers are going to be similar. I would absolutely agree that setting yourself up with a budget is definitely a great way to go into that My family actually really loves to do the Secret Santa.
Okay.
So.
And you put a dollar amount on that?
Yeah, we do put a dollar
all
amount.
Right. Do
that.
People
we,
stick to it?
They do. They do.
Good.
They
that's
do.
Good. They follow
Sometimes
mom's
we gotta make
advice.
Sure there's a minimum too, right?
Yes. Yes.
But they do. They, we do have like a range. Like so, there's a minimum amount you can spend, and then there's a maximum amount you can spend, and there's also even the like you know categories of this is what I'm looking for. It's just so that the other person has an idea. But that way you're buying one really good gift instead of, you know, 15 different gifts that can really add up, right? It can be a big cost. Yeah. So the other thing that I would recommend is looking at last year's statements. So what did you spend last year? Is that realistic to spend the same amount this year? Is that something that I can budget for this year and starting to save earlier on and not waiting till the last minute, you know, Black Friday to go shopping? And then, you know, if you have kids like I do. Right. I have a 2-year-old.
How old are your kids again?
So I have a 2-year-old, I have a 7-year-old, and I have a 16-year-old.
All right, that's going to keep you busy.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So the 16-year-old, you know, he's getting to the age where everything that he wants is super expensive, right? AirPods, a new phone.
Shoes.
Oh, gosh,
and they're
$100
all like $300. Yes, oh, yeah. I'm there as well, yes.
But if you have a 2-year-old and a 7-year-old, I feel like one of the best ways to spend the holiday is just by spending time with them. And maybe doing an activity or something that is going to be more engaging for them. Because if you buy them a $50 toy, by the end of the week, they're probably going to move on. You know, so you spend all of that money in something that they're not necessarily going to continue to use. Yeah. So I just like the value of time spent.
Yeah. We'll have more with Flori Jerez Villaseñor after the break. We're going to look into generational differences in money. We're joined by Flori Jerez Villaseñor, who joined us in October to talk about generational differences with money.
I saw a recent study from Bank of America said 72% of Gen Z, and Gen Z, just to level set it, 13 to 28-year-olds, 72% of Gen Z individuals are taking proactive steps to improve their financial health. They're budgeting, they're investing. But that slips down to about 58% when you look at millennials in that 29 to 44 range. So it just made me think, Flori, like in your work day to day, do you see big philosophical differences when it comes to generations and how they think and even spend money?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely have been seeing some big differences between different generations. I think one of the biggest shifts has definitely been home ownership. I've been working with a lot of younger clients who already might have an investment account, have a ton of money saved up in their retirement account. And maybe this third or fourth or fifth step is now finally starting to own a home or think about owning a home. So I think, you know, for later generations, home ownership was really step one. Yeah. And then everything else came second or third or fourth. But I think there's definitely some differences of opinion and just people seeing things differently with owning property and not necessarily home ownership.
Do you see differences in how generations view debt, whether it's a mortgage or credit card debt? I mean, are there differences there? Are there more risk aversion as you go younger?
Yeah, you know, I think there's a misconception across all of the generations, and it really depends on if you were planted the seed early on when you were younger on the financial education of just debt and how it works. So I think for some people, especially when they're listening to, you know, social media influencers and, you know, people who don't necessarily have the credentials but have a lot to say, they'll think all debt is bad debt, right?
Right.
You want to have cash on hand and pay for everything for cash, and you want to pay off your house as quickly as possible. But, you know, I always like to say that there is a difference between good debt and bad debt, and debt can really help you go to that next level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when it comes to credit card debt or payday loans, I definitely do not encourage to do that unless you're going to pay off the rolling balance right away, month to month, with credit card debt. But there's definitely some fear, but I think that's instilled in people when they're younger, going through however their parents raised them.
Yeah. What about like social values and priorities, like sustainability and experiences? Does that factor into investment choices for generations?
Yeah, I haven't seen too much of that. I think, you know, one of the things that I've noticed is that people don't necessarily have all of the information before they decide to move forward on something. Like, I'm going to give you a really good example of, you know, people oftentimes say, you know, have really good benefits through work. And then you get into, okay, tell me what those are. Well, I know they're really good benefits, but I don't know exactly what those are.
I haven't taken the time to read all the documents or had the meeting yet,
but
I know they're really good.
I know I'm saving for retirement. I know I'm doing really good in the retirement space, but they don't know exactly what that percentage is or what their match is. So I think even just the knowing of, like, what do I have?
Right,
how can
right.
I leverage it is what I have been experiencing.
Yeah, and that probably brings up another difference is just that how do you seek advice? Generations, you know, are so... There's a difference between online and person, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to get different data and you're going to be able to ask questions in a different manner and probably just... learn in a different way. Are you seeing that from a financial advisor standpoint that the younger generations are so comfortable online, but then maybe not as comfortable sitting down one-on-one?
Yeah. I think that there is just the ease of access to information and being able to quickly search something on ChatGPT or Google has definitely made it easier for the younger generations to go online and look things up. I don't know how much confidence there is in that space because there is just so much information out there that oftentimes it can be overwhelming, even for the younger generation.
Yeah.
But I definitely would say that the older generations are more hesitant to just go online to find their answer, and they want to have more of a, you know, face-to-face type format to get answers to their questions and to trust that information more.
How many questions you get regularly about crypto and alternative assets?
Yeah, so crypto and what's the other one? Bitcoin and crypto are definitely things that oftentimes younger generations, you know, people in their 20s, 30s, sometimes early 40s are asking.
Mm-hmm.
And my response is always like, if you're going to invest in that, I'm not going to tell you not to invest in it. You know, there can be really good returns in that, but have it be a percentage of your overall portfolio. It's not something that, you know, having a financial plan isn't being 100% invested in something like crypto or Bitcoin.
Yeah. All right. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day and all the best in the future.
Thank you, Jeff.
Coming up next, if you're flying this holiday weekend or any time this holiday season, Milwaukee County Airport Director Brian Dranzik joined us recently to talk about Spirit Airlines leaving MKE and how to handle holiday travel best with you and your family. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Brian Dranzik, Airport Director at Milwaukee County, joins us in studio. Brian, I appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
So Spirit Airlines recently announced it's leaving Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean from a traveler and revenue standpoint for the airport? And then I want to talk about alternatives and just what that recruitment retention process looks like from you and your team.
Sure. So, you know, Spirit's been going through some financial struggles. They've gone into bankruptcy once again. And for a while there, we were actually faring fairly well through that. There was a number of city cuts that had happened earlier. We were out of those rounds, but I think it's just gotten to the point where they've had to make other cuts. So we weren't alone in that regard. When they did make their announcement, that also included places like St. Louis and others. They had pared down the service pretty substantially. So right now, they're basically only flying to Orlando and on a pretty limited schedule. So
it's a pretty good deals for one way to Orlando. It's not like $29 the other day. I'm like, wow.
Yeah. And I don't know if that quite sustains an airline, but No, there's, you know, there's, as you can imagine, there's a lot of service on that. And yeah. for this time of year, you know, we've got three other carriers on that. And likely, I think what we'll see is maybe some of those other carriers beefing up that service to there and potentially some of the other cities that they serve. So, you know, we're always talking with airlines, all the airline partners that we have right now currently, and also new carriers that we're trying to attract in the market. So it's a pretty ongoing conversation. You know, we're talking about they see what bookings look like, and they have their market information that they're working off of. But we try to do is infill that information and talk about what's going on in the city. You know, what are the positive things going on to give them a little bit more of that local flavor. And, you know, one of the things we're trying to do as an airport to stay competitive against our peers is keep our costs as low as possible. I frankly think that's why Spirit hung in with us as long as they did, and other carriers as well. So, you know, we're doing the things I think we can on our side to make the airport competitive operating environment for them. And what we always try to let the public know is it's important that they utilize the airport, you know, because the airlines are a business, and it's a tough business, and they got to make a profit, and so they're going to go where people are wanting to go or wanting to, you know, fly out of, which it's important given how close we are to a place like Chicago.
And then holiday outlook, busiest travel days and routes this season, and then the tips that you would have to make sure that it is truly a seamless process for us.
You know, we're coming up on Thanksgiving, so Tuesday, Wednesday before tend to be some pretty heavy travel days, and then that Sunday thereafter is a really busy day. And then, you know, it kind of takes a little bit of a break, and then we start hitting into the Christmas and then the post-Christmas travel season, the kind of the getaway season. And, you know, I think the message for people on some of those busier times is just take a little more time, you know. Utilize things like our parking app to reserve your spot. Know that you have that taken care of. Those are things that'll help de-stress the whole experience. You know, just know that those are a little bit heavier volume time periods, and you know, if you arrive a little bit earlier, it'll make your journey a little bit better.
Very good. Appreciate all you do, you and your team at the airport, for sure.
Thank you.
And appreciate your time, Brian.
All right, thank you very much.
Coming up next, earlier this month, we were joined by a dietitian from Roundy's, Emily Williamson. We learned all about the protein craze, how much is too much, how are grocery stores stocking their shelves with all this new protein-filled products. Welcome back to The Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. Today, we're going to dive into the protein trend. It's nutritional importance, for sure, but I think it's kind of reshaping our grocery aisles, especially with the holidays coming up. I wanted to dive in to this proliferation of protein. It is everywhere. So Emily Williamson is the Division Corporate Affairs Manager at Roundy's. Emily is also a registered dietitian, and she's in studio with us. Emily, thanks for your time.
Oh my gosh, thanks for having me.
Of course, of course. So let's just get right into this protein thing, because it is like everywhere. Like Starbucks, you're being said, all right, just add protein, pasta. Everywhere is protein right now. Has public attitudes towards protein changed? And kind of what's driving this? Is it marketing? Is there something more? Just level set on protein for us.
Absolutely. Your timing could not be better on this topic. Okay. Protein is very hot right now. We actually just launched a whole new protein set, Simple Truth protein line in store. So when you're saying you're seeing it everywhere, we're putting it in the aisle too because shoppers are asking us for it. So, you know, there's a lot of potential factors in what's driving the attention to protein right now. It is a very important nutrient and part of what your body needs and those amino acids as well as fiber and fats. But there's also a lot of attention on it in platforms like social media platforms right now, where people are very excited about their use of protein. And because they have social media, they can tell others about their desire to utilize this nutrient and how they're utilizing it, which makes a lot of attention to it and sometimes some challenges for us as nutrition professionals.
So it's more than a moment, for sure. But how do we know, like, how much we need? I think people are still maybe struggling with, what does 56 grams of sugar in my soda mean? Like, how are we supposed to know, like, what's too much from a protein standpoint?
That's such a great question. So before I break it down, I'm going to give you a couple of tools that we're providing you in store, on your phone, on your computer, that's going to help answer some of those questions, which includes that added sugar question you just mentioned.
All right.
So the first thing I want to talk about is, I love that we have this on our website. It's called Food Health Score. So when you go up and you open up the website, the app, you find the item you're looking at, and you look at those product details, it's going to give you a score. And that score helps make it so easy to digest rather than looking at nutrition facts panels, ingredients lists. What do all of those things mean? This is intended to be a way that is scientifically based to say, hey, this is kind of balancing it out. It looks at the quality of the ingredients and the nutritional content as well. So it's kind of looking at those things like added sugars, all of those questions. To answer your question about protein, though.
Because if I'm looking at this pasta right here, 16 grams of protein, I just don't know what that means.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the recommended dietary allowance today says 0.8 grams per kilogram is the recommended protein amount. You're like, what is that?
Yeah, I'm going to need an app for that or something.
Absolutely. So let's say you happen to be 110 pounds.
Okay.
Really easy math to do. You take your weight divided by 2.2. So if you're 110 pounds divided by 2.2, and then you multiply, so then you're at 50.
Okay.
Fun fact.
All right.
And then 0.8 is that RDA. So I'm going to need my calculator here. So we've got.
You didn't know we were going to have math on the upswing today, but we are. Speaks to a bigger trend, though, in terms of how people are shopping and the access and the use of technology as you're walking down the aisles. And I'm sure you're seeing that in your stores now. People are not only have their lists digitally and are using the digital coupons, but they're coming at with whatever app they have and inputting their buys real time.
Absolutely. They're inputting their data. They're hopefully utilizing what we've provided for them as tools. So, you know, that recommended dietary allowance, it's about 40 grams if you're a 110-pound human. If you're looking at some of the newer research, as we age, we might need more protein. I've read studies that are recommending maybe a gram per kilogram, so that would be 50 grams. So when you're saying, how much do I need per meal, you're going to want to kind of break that down into, you know, three meals a day, a couple of snacks. What does that look like? So that's really where it's really great to get this protein option, because some of those meals, like breakfast, we talked about breakfast at the start of that.
I walked in, I saw Cheerios protein. Like, what does that mean? Do I need protein in my cereal?
So when you're talking about in the morning, you know, I as an adult can make very mindful choices on what I'm putting in my breakfast bowl. But as you have tiny humans running around the house, they're like, Mom, Dad, I just want waffles. So the protein waffles that we've got, I've got some examples here. That's a great way to add some additional protein into breakfast, serve it as a well-rounded meal. Because as a dietitian, that's what we're always kind of trying to stress. Don't overstimulate with one thing, balance it out. So serve it with some fruit. I love chia seeds. That's a great source of protein fiber. Mix that with some fruit and make a jam yourself. Yeah. There's just a lot of options that you can do to help build. But again, it's really about that well-rounded experience and making sure that you're eating a balanced meal.
Talking with Emily Williamson from Roundies. Emily, so one thing I noticed, I want to talk technology a little bit more as I'm walking through the aisles at the stores. You have the electronic price tags now that allow for quick change, I'm guessing, and a little bit better data capture on your end. How can the consumer then best price check when they're walking down the aisle?
Well, that tag is hopefully eliminating that need, because it's really about providing that value and making sure that we're delivering that right at the shelf.
Okay.
The app is my favorite tool. I mean, everything, you know, from the nutrition nerd, where I can see my nutrition insights every time I shop and I get a score. But you also get to see where things are in aisles. So if I'm in a new store and I'm like, where do they keep whatever I'm looking for? Okay. You know, I love for example, I'm looking for, you know, that Simple Truth pasta sauce that I've been craving. I can pull it right up in the app and it'll tell me what aisle it's located in. So technology is really helping us drive home, you know, that valiance, mm-hmm. that value, and also helping that speed, helping our shoppers shop faster, get them the information they need. And the tools, there's recipes, there's inspiration. You can shop right from those recipes. Yeah. There's just so much that we can do with technology to help with that convenience and continue to drive value for our shoppers.
Emily, I appreciate your time. All the best this holiday season, and we'll do this again soon.
I hope so.
And finally, John Wise from Marcus Hotels and Resorts joined us recently, looking at trends in beverages in and around the city of Milwaukee. That's coming up next. Welcome back to The Upswing. John Wise from Marcus Hotels and Resorts joins us in studio. John, again, I appreciate you spending some time with us today.
Having fun.
So, food and beverage trends that you're seeing across all of your properties, what are you championing now in terms of innovation and guest experience in Milwaukee?
Well, you said the key word there is experience. I mean, ever since we're still living this post-COVID area where people are looking for special things to do, and we're trying to provide that. We did recently rebrand our restaurant at the St. Kate Hotel from Aria to Studio to kind of take advantage of this a little bit. Okay. And about a year ago, we rolled out sushi and brought you folks a little sample here. I know it's lunch, but help yourself.
Okay. All right.
I think it's pretty good.
All right.
You know, Greg came up to me and said, I want to have sushi here. And I go, sure, right. I thought he was joking,
okay. But
he wasn't joking.
Can I ask how you source the sushi?
Right.
Like, so how do you do that on scale then?
Well, I've been in the business 50 years and I've done a lot of things, but sushi's a new thing to me.
Yeah.
And I had to think about it and went back to them and I said, well, we're going to need X amount of equipment. We're going to need X amount of salaries. And I'm going to need 2 to 3 months to find the right people to do it.
Because there's an expectation with sushi. Like 100%. You're an aficionado and you need it to be at a certain level or you're probably not going to come back that second time.
Well, candidly, I didn't start eating sushi till I was 30. Right? Before you guys were born. So, and what I learned is, okay, it's good, but I can eat only really the good stuff. I can't be eating supermarkets and gas station sushi, which is my name for a great toxic rock band, gas station sushi. But anyhow, so it had, you know, I'd go to Chicago, New York, LA, whatever, because, you know, the sushi in Milwaukee was okay. It wasn't great. But things have really started to explode right now, and we're very fortunate. We found a 25-year sushi chef veteran, you know, born in LA, worked around the country, Miami, consulted in France, and just the sweetest guy you ever saw. So he did some tastings for us. We were blown away, and we had to raise our expectations. We thought it's going to be this little thing we'll do in the restaurant. We sell a ton in the lobby bar of the hotel, in-room dining, catering. And when I found out how good he was, I said, we need to do omakases. We need to do twice a month in our dark room, special event space, intimate dinners, 14 people. And we're doing 2 a month, and they're selling out. Now, we're not the only ones doing that. There are other people doing that.
Right.
There are 2 new sushi restaurants getting ready to open again. So there's
one
new,
right down the street on Water Street.
Yeah. Right. And another omakase one not too far away. So it's definitely sushi is really coming of age here in Milwaukee. We're thrilled to be a part of it. I think what we're doing is some of the best sushi in Milwaukee, and you'll let me know what you think.
All right. Does that speak to kind of the level, the elevation level of the entire dining experience, if you will, in Milwaukee that we've grown up?
Well, omakases are that kind of a thing, right? I mean, never really was happening here, but it's been happening in the bigger cities. We bought a hotel a couple years ago in Minneapolis, and I hadn't done much work in Minneapolis. And as I did my research, I was stunned how many high-quality ethnic restaurants. And that's the next kind of thing that's happening. And you see that in bigger cities. And these are smaller mom-and-pop places. And I'm looking, all the top restaurants are Asian or, you know, or Latin, and we're going to see more of that here in the market too, and more small plate restaurants as well.
Yeah, and if you can anchor those to personality driven chefs that they all like to showcase what they do, even better. And if you have that guest experience that
is already there,
right,
that story travels. And that's important.
Yeah. And, you know, again, we're still in the selfie generation, right? And everybody wants to take pictures of themselves in a dark room and sushi and doing fun different things that their neighbors aren't doing.
Yes. Well, one of the best ways to get some good photos and selfies is holiday time.
Right.
The hotels are totally activated, full of lights and events. Maybe you're still working on it. You know,
no,
we're almost there.
No, it's...
But let's talk about
the
hotel.
It's so big now. You know, I worked in New York for a brief period of time. And if you've ever spent any time in New York City in the holidays, you see, you know, the big hotels like the Plaza were so busy and decorated. And we said, well, why can't we have that? Well, that is the Pfister. You know, to, and I'm going to use the word to a T, you know, because they've been very big with their afternoon teas.
Yes.
We've doubled that in the last 2 or 3 years, and that's another experiential thing, you know, people going out to these teas and getting all dressed up. But coming up, I mean, we have, we were doing Breakfast with Santa, you know, a couple of them,
right,
and it's blown up so much, we now have 8 scheduled at the Pfister, multiple seatings, all selling out. We're doing them at the St. Kate now. We're doing gingerbread workshop classes at the Pfister for the kids. St. Kate is doing a vendor fair, a marketplace with 60 vendors. The places are all decorated up. They're all open on Christmas and Thanksgiving, and there's just so much. New Year's Eve, New Year's Day brunch at St. Kate, Bubbles and Brunch. It's crazy.
And are you seeing an increase compared to last year in terms of event bookings? Are corporate parties back? That's always a, you know, in the news space, that's always an item like, ooh, corporate parties, where are they booking and are they still big?
Well, if you remember, you know, last year we had RNC here, you know, back in 24. And, you know, it was, you know, we did very well. I know some people didn't, but, you know, the hotel rooms were good and the banquet space was good and we had really good revenues. And everybody said, oh, we're going to go down the next year because we don't have RNC. Wrong. Our business without RNC is actually even up. Hmm. And that goes to your point. I mean, we're still doing a lot of weddings, Geneva, Pfister, even St. Kate is a beautiful place for a stylish, not stuffy wedding. But yeah, and the corporate business is back. I just left St. Kate today. The whole place is full on Monday and Tuesday nights in November. Yeah. I mean, that's great.
Well, and it's great to have, you know, the Bucks back and Marquette back and UWM back. It just further activates the downtown area and it's going to be good for your business.
Yeah, that's a big part of it too. Theater, sports, it feels like COVID almost never happened.
That's right. All right, John, I appreciate your time giving us an update on all that's new at Marcus, and we'll see you for some of the Christmas and holiday events very soon.
I hope so.
Thanks for joining us today. You can always go to WTMJ.com to get all podcast episodes for any show heard here on WTMJ. We'll see you again next week.